You're listening to Cannabis Radio News' exclusive coverage of Vote 2016, The Path to Cannabis Freedom, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to our election night preview, and we are discussing the Denver Social Use Initiative. This has been brought forth by folks at Denver Leaf Consulting and other activists that want to see a form of licensing that local businesses in Denver can use to allow for the adult consumption of marijuana on their premises. We're reaching out to Kayvon Kalatvari at Denver Relief Consulting to discuss the issue. Unfortunately, the number he's given me has some sort of automatic answering system that is not going to allow me to get in touch with him, I'm afraid.
Thank you for calling Denver Relief Consulting.
Thank you.
A boutique, full-service cannabis business
Let's just see if we can get an operator on the line and get Kayvon here to talk to us. Reaching out to Denver Relief
Consulting. Thank you for calling Denver Relief Consulting. How may I help you today?
Hi there. This is Russ Belville from the Russ Belville Show. I'm supposed to be speaking with Kayvon for an interview. Hello? Russ Belville from the Russ Belville Show. I'm supposed to be speaking with Kayvon Kalatvari for an interview. This is maddening. I'm so sorry, folks. We are doing this live, and we will see if we can get through to Denver Relief Consulting here.
Thank you for calling Denver
and
Relief.
Get Kayvon Kalatvari on the line. We'll see how this works. So many buttons to push, so many
ways. Thank you for calling Denver Relief Consulting.
Hi, Russ Belville from the Russ Belville Show. Trying to reach Kayvon for an interview.
Russ?
Yes. He told me to call this office line.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hold on. Yes, Russ Belville from the Russ Belville Show. Trying to reach Kayvon for an interview.
Yes, sir. Russ?
Yes.
Okay, hold on just one moment and I'll transfer you through.
Thank you. Sorry, everyone listening live. We have to deal with these things sometimes. Looking forward to this social use initiative, though. There's a real need for this. Hello, Kayvon?
Yes, how are you, Russ?
Hi, thanks for joining us here on the show in our marijuana election night preview. We wanted to get you here to talk about the Denver Social Use Initiative and maybe fill our listeners in on some of the details. What would this initiative, should it pass, provide for the people of Denver?
Sure. So yeah, the problem we have here in Denver, and which is really sweeping across the country as these recreational initiatives pass, is the fact that we're allowing people to purchase cannabis, possess cannabis, but not giving them a legal outlet to consume it. That's created a conundrum here in Denver where we have public consumption tickets on the rise dramatically, 500% since legalization, predominantly people of color getting arrested and cited for this use. As Nevada, California, Arizona, Massachusetts are on the ballot this fall, we're looking at this becoming a larger conundrum. So what this would do is allow any business type, if they had the support of a neighborhood registered organization, there's 192 of those in Denver, to get that support and apply for a permit with excise and licensing here in Denver to allow for responsible cannabis consumption, to get it off the streets, get it out of parks, and then really treat it similarly to alcohol, finally.
I really love this initiative and the efforts to try to provide some sort of public consumption space. The efforts so far in other states and other places in Colorado, for that matter, have kind of focused on a bring your own bud private model where cannabis users are segregated from all other sorts of outlets. Whereas this initiative, you know, we could have, public use at, like you said, any type of business, a yoga studio, pizza parlor, restaurant, whatever. But realistically speaking, Kayvon, of those 190 odd organizations, how many of them do you think are really going to support this? Is there neighborhood support for this idea?
That's a great question. I can tell you right now that I sit on the board of directors for one, the Art District on Santa Fe, that's very interested in pursuing this. We've had discussions with other neighborhood organizations that are in charge of territories that are looking for a differentiator. They're looking for an advantage in competing with some of the more well-funded districts around Denver. So the Colfax Strip in general here in Denver, which is has not got a lot of attention from the city as far as getting redone, getting some of the resources brought into them. There is interest. And the beauty of this, I think, this initiative is it allows folks to baby step into this process. So if we can get even 3, 4, or 5 of these groups on board, which I think we can very early on, they're going to prove that the sky's not going to fall, just as we did with Amendment 64, prove that this is a workable solution. And I believe it's ultimately going to create competition amongst these neighborhood organizations that are looking for differentiators in getting people to their districts. So I think even though we may not have a huge amount of support from these rather conservative organizations on the front end, it's only a matter of time before, just as we've done with Amendment 64, prove that this is something that is here to stay and something that can really be a huge boon for the economy of these local neighborhoods. I look at Amendment 64 when it passed here in Colorado. Denver was the only city in the 10 most populous in the entire state that took advantage of allowing these licenses to exist recreationally here in Denver. And now we're seeing almost every municipality come on board with it because they understand the benefits and the need for cannabis progress and policy. So, just as we've done for the last 12 years, I've been in this movement here in Colorado. It's all about baby steps. It's all about being the bigger person, having these ideas and making sure that all stakeholders are included in that conversation, which is what this initiative does. I have no doubt it's going to prove itself and get other people on board with it over time.
If one of the neighborhood organizations grants its approval for licensees within its neighborhood, is that subject to renewal? Could they then revoke that at some later time?
So the conditions that are agreed upon by this prospective permit holder and these neighborhood organizations do become a condition of that permit. The beauty of the permit system, it's not a license. It's not a year-long license like a liquor license, or there's another initiative here in Denver that failed to make the ballot. That would have been a year-long license. This could be for a two-hour permit for an event. It could be for only certain days of the week, certain hours of the day. It could be for a month or a year. It allows people to baby step in it. So I have no doubt that we're going to use these first to adopt neighborhood organizations to create best practices that make other people feel comfortable with buying into this. So, it's the process of really understanding that this is the first time this has ever been done in the history of the world. There isn't a place in the world that regulates the social use of cannabis, and Denver can really be the first advantage of that. I have no doubt this has done really well, I think, at the forefront of this cannabis movement thus far. The world see that this is something that's necessary, and it's going to get implemented appropriately, responsibly, and with the input of all stakeholders.
Are there any requirements or restrictions that potential license holders or permit applicants, I should say, might need to know? They have to be out of public view or have a certain amount of air circulation or has to be indoors, anything like that?
You bet. So cannabis has been formally adopted into the Colorado Clean Indoor Air Act. So this would not technically allow for the combustion of cannabis indoors unless you're within some of these exemptions, which is like having 3 employees or less or something like that, which we can do with events. We can do with all sorts of things on a smaller level, not maybe for the longer enduring licenses. But we can allow for combustion outdoors on patios, on rooftop decks, as long as they're outside of the public right-of-way view and outside of view of places where children congregate. There's odor requirements of, if too much combustion's happening and it's an annoyance to the neighbor, we have odor control provisions that all cannabis businesses must comply with here in Denver. And then ultimately, it's a pilot program. So if this whole entire thing fails, which I really don't believe that it's going to, this will sunset in 4 years unless extended by city council or voter initiative. But ultimately, having those neighborhood organizations as a part of this allows them to create restrictions that are ultimately right for their neighborhood and ease into this. Other restrictions that they may have to be considerate of are, you know, we have tips training for alcohol. If you're serving someone in a bar setting, you have to go through some third-party training and get certified to make sure that you understand what intoxication is, you understand when to cut people off. We're going to push for that same thing to exist for cannabis consumption. We also allow for the City Council and Excise and Licensing here in Denver to implement additional provisions that don't fall outside of the initial scope, to make sure that their concerns are heard and that we really have everybody's input on this, which is ultimately the most important thing and something Colorado's done really well in the history of cannabis progress.
Kayvon, assuming that the relevant neighborhood organization would approve the permit, is this initiative expansive and flexible enough to herald the return of the High Times Cannabis Cup to Denver?
That's a great question. So there are a couple things that I think lead into that conversation. First of all, this initiative has pushed state legislature to create action. So they actually just finalized the bill proposal yesterday that's going to be introduced to the legislative session in Colorado next year that would allow for consumption tasting rooms, so to say, similar to what we have for breweries, to exist here adjacent to dispensaries. So I know that the Cannabis Cup folks are talking with a couple dispensary operators here that are working on some larger projects, such as an amphitheater, a cannabis museum, kind of this cannabis property. It would allow for the consumption of state legislative initiative adjacent to those dispensaries. But in addition, it wouldn't preclude ours from happening. So theoretically, we could have these different approved, licensed, permitted spaces for cannabis consumption. And yes, I would say that this would allow for the return of the High Times Cannabis Cup.
Fantastic news. Kayvon Kalatbari is with Denver Relief Consulting, and the initiative is the Denver Neighborhood Supported Social Use Initiative. I hope I got that right. Tell them the actual details. What's the number and any sort of contact they might need to get more information?
Yeah, this is initiated ordinance 300 this fall in Denver. It is the Neighborhood Supported Cannabis Consumption Pilot Program. You can learn a whole lot more. We're obviously taking donations because we need to educate voters appropriately about what this means. You can do that and learn more about the initiative and see the list of 80 business supporters we have so far. I hope to grow that to 300 before this passes. Also, our political endorsements are on there. The Denver Democratic Party just endorsed us on Monday. So we're getting progress in traditional spheres as well. But the website is socialuse.org, and that's like everything you need. If anybody wants to reach out to me and have a discussion about it personally, more than happy to, because this is ultimately about education and making sure that this thing that's not going away is appropriately considered and hopefully implemented.
Well, Kayvon, good luck on election night. We'll be covering it on Marijuana Election Night 2016 here on CannabisRadio.com, and I hope to report that Denver becomes the first jurisdiction in the world to allow this kind of social use. Kayvon, thanks for all you're doing, and good luck.
Thank you very much for having me, Russ. Take care.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
All you have to do is decriminalize. We don't need a government regulation to tell us this is good pot, that's bad pot. We don't need any of that.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We need to build a wall.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to Cannabis Radio News' exclusive coverage of Vote 2016, The Path to Cannabis Freedom, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody, and continuing our preview of Marijuana Election Night 2016, the most impactful election in marijuana reform history. We're joined on the telephone by Ryan Denham with Arkansas Compassion. And Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Russ, thanks for having me on again.
Yep, glad to have you here. And I was telling folks earlier today in one of our segments about these shenanigans that are going on down there in Arkansas. You got two different initiatives on the ballot, and one of them, the other one, is fighting to get you off the ballot. Can you give us some of your perspective on what's happening down there?
That's right. So our campaign, issue number 7, we've actually been sued twice. Luckily, the first lawsuit was just dismissed outright yesterday, and that was just a simple ballot title challenge. But this second suit that we're facing right now, it has came to light that this is actually funded for and organized by the competing campaign. So they're actually trying to kick us off the ballot with the signatures. They're trying to argue that we have technical errors versus clerical errors. And, you know, and during one of the hearings that we had last week, one of the key witnesses was actually asked how much she was paid to investigate our campaign. And she was actually paid $30,000 to go and find and go on a witch hunt to try to find, you know, tiny, tiny technical problems with signatures.
Wow. And it's really difficult to try to understand the motivation here. I mean, I know some of the basics of the background that Issue 7's Melissa Fultz and Issue 6's David Couch had worked together back in 2012, had a falling out. But is this really coming down to just two people that have a personal dispute and one of them going a bit overboard? Is that all there is to this?
Well, I think that's probably one of the major reasons that this is happening, but I also think there's probably a big financial factor as well. I think Mr. Couch has kind of set up some of his donors to potentially have a big stake in this industry, and how the concentration of power, how his initiative would basically, you know, put the power of concentration into the cannabis industry in just a few people's hands. So, you know, it's not technically a monopoly, but it's going to, you know, as few as four people could control the entire industry under Issue 6.
Mm. And of course, Issue 7, with its ability for a lot of the patients to be able to home grow their own cannabis medicine, would put a dent into some of those profits as well.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So we have a hardship cultivation in our initiative. We have 56 medical conditions versus the 14 medical conditions that we have. And, you know, we made the ballot first. And so we always expected, you know, if we made the ballot first, the other campaign would fizzle out. And unfortunately, that never happened. And things have really, you know, just kept going. And it's been unfortunate. And, you know, the tragedy out of all of this is the patients are facing, you know, the consequences here. And the patients are the ones that could really lose on Election Day if these two initiatives both, you know, cause each other to fail.
Yeah, it really is maddening to have to go through this. And other reports that I've come across have said, this was up on weednews.co, that $1 million of potential funding for Issue 7 was lost when Issue 6 wouldn't step aside. And how has the fundraising been proceeding? And is that a major hit, or are we going to be able to overcome that?
Yeah, that was a major hit. You know, we're the second poorest state in the nation, so it is difficult to raise money in Arkansas. There's a lot of competition right now. You know, this is a big election. So, you know, we've been largely a grassroots campaign. You know, we've raised around $160,000, but $1 million donation would have been, you know, a major help for us moving forward, you know, TV ads and ad buys and, you know, getting out the vote. So, you know, it's really frustrating that Issue 6 couldn't, change, you know, we disagree on some things, but they couldn't put those aside and come to work as a team. And that's really, you know, upsetting. But, you know, we're trying to stay as positive as possible. We're feeling good about this second lawsuit. We're, you know, we think that the court will side with us. So these are, you know, tiny clerical errors, not technical errors. You know, the court's already ruled that we do, in fact, have enough signatures that are actually from registered voters, and we collected them from enough counties. So, you know, we've satisfied all those requirements. And so right now, you know, we're trying to get out the vote, educate as many people. We've got folks on the ground across the state, and things are going pretty good on the ground.
The other thing that concerns me here is how this turns out after Election Day, when you've got the issue 6, which is a constitutional amendment, and the issue 7, which is a statutory act. If both of those should pass, which one goes into effect? Do parts of both of them go into effect? Does it matter who got more votes? Does amendment trump act? I mean, there's a lot of questions there, but what do you see as far as the outcome if both should happen to get a passing vote?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, the short answer is no one really knows. If they were both constitutional initiatives, or if they were both statutory initiatives, then the one with the most votes would win and become law. But since we're an initiated act and the competing campaign is a constitutional amendment, you know, some think the ones with that they could be potentially reconciled with each other, and that parts of ours that aren't prohibited under 6 could be interwoven with his. So, you know, it's really unclear what's going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, if they both get more than 50% of the vote, it's probably going to end up in court for quite a long time. And then patients, again, are the ones that are going to suffer because, you know, the decision needs to be made in court.
In 2012, when Arkansas tried medical marijuana on the ballot, it just narrowly failed. I think it was something like 48%, maybe a little over that. Now, in this election cycle, are the voters more on board with this? Is there good polling? And are they getting some confusion because there's two initiatives on the ballot?
Yeah, another good, great question, Russ. So, yeah, in 2012, we were narrowly defeated on Election Day. It was 49-51, so, it, you know, very close vote. You know, there's been polls that have been floating around that show upwards of 80% of Arkansans support the idea of medical cannabis. But when you look at the specifics with the two initiatives, we had a poll done by FM3, a bipartisan polling coalition, and they found that our initiative, Issue 7, polled around 68%. And that included, you know, explaining the details of the law with the grow your own and everything. And then the issue 6, the more big business marijuana initiative, was polling in the upper 50s. So, you know, it really kind of illustrated that Arkansans support grow your own, that Arkansans want cannabis tested, that is, you know, that has to be tested for safety. They support that there's 56 medical conditions versus 14. So, you know, the polling looked great, but when you add 2 on the ballot, you have the, you know, the splitting situation, and you know the initial results showed that it would split the vote enough where both would fail, but of course we're not going to let that happen. We're on the ground. We're working as hard as we can to get out the vote and make sure everyone knows number 7 is the one to vote for.
I'm also curious. One of the things I think about when I think of Arkansas is Walmart, headquartered there in Bentonville. Is there any indication from this massive retailer one way or the other on these issues?
There's really not. You know, they don't, I mean, large corporate conglomerates don't, you know, usually get involved in things like this. And I mean, you know, there's been maybe some small conversations with people who, you know, have connections to Walmart, but nothing's ever really panned out. And I would imagine they're probably going to stay silent on the issue.
Okay. And details that we could maybe go over as far as the amendment or the initiative goes on how many plants people could cultivate, how many ounces they could possess, and is there reciprocity for other medical marijuana states?
So there is indeed reciprocity for other states. Under our campaign, Issue 7, we allow for patients to possess 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks. If you're more than 20 miles away from a dispensary, you can apply for a hardship cultivation license where you could grow 5 flowering plants and 5 non-flowering plants in an enclosed and locked location. We have 56 medical conditions, and we also have something that I don't think any other state has to the degree that we were proposing, but it's an affordability clause. And this allows low-income patients to be able to purchase medical cannabis at a subsidized level on a discounted sliding scale. And that would be completely paid for by the program. The entirety of our sales tax would go back into the program with the hope that this won't cost taxpayers anything to run the program.
Mm, great news on that. And another thing I think about with Arkansas is your governor, Asa Hutchinson, a former head of the Drug Enforcement Administration. He's been vocal in his opposition to either of the initiatives. How about the rest of the political establishment? Is this something that's generating a lot of buzz in your among your lawmakers?
Yeah, so, you know, we actually had the Arkansas State Democrats come out and endorse medical cannabis, and that's huge. You know, I've been in the state for 15 years, and to see a major party come out and do that, you know, really, I think, sent a strong message that things are changing here in Arkansas. It, however, seems that more of the conservative side is a little less supportive right now. We have the State Chamber of Commerce. They were part of the lawsuit, the first lawsuit that was just dismissed. We have the State Farm Bureau Insurance. They are also suing us on the first lawsuit. So, Governor Hutchinson, who's, like you said, a former DEA administrator for the entire country, he kind of appointed our Surgeon General to really be opposing our campaign. And they actually brought down Kevin Sabet this week, who spoke to a group of law enforcement officers. So, I don't really think that their points are resonating with a lot of Arkansans. I think a lot of Arkansans are waking up and they're kind of tired of the same, you know, drug war rhetoric. And you know, I think that when we get out there and we talk about the patient stories and the real Arkansans that really need medical cannabis and how it helps them, I think voters are smart enough and compassionate enough to see through that.
Ryan Denham is a spokesperson for Arkansas Compassion, and the Issue 7 initiative is on the ballot there in Arkansas. Make sure you pick 7, not 6. Go with cannabis, not marijuana. Make the right choice. Ryan, thanks for joining us, and we appreciate all the work you guys are doing. Give folks any contact info, websites, or anything they might need if they want more info.
Yeah, so website is arcompassion.com. You can sign up to be a volunteer or make a donation. And we sure appreciate you having us on the show again, Russ.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm looking forward to election night when I get to call Arkansas's Issue 7 a winner and we finally get some medical marijuana expanding in the South. Thanks, Ryan, and good luck.
All right. Thank you, Russ.
Well, folks, that's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned. Hour 2 is next, Toker Talk Radio. The phone lines are open at 650-534-2565. That's 650-LEGAL-MJ. We're going to talk about a plan in New Jersey to regulate marijuana like cigarettes. Also, Stoners Against Legalization, Maine edition, coming up. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Hour 2. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.